Welcome to the Journey 8. I'm Reverend Judy Hosner, and I invite you to sit back and spend a few moments with us as we share some music and dialogue with you. And welcome to the Journey 8. And I'm Reverend Judy Hosner. And hey, it's 2017. Yes, and this is our first broadcast of the year. And I think you will like it. I like it. And so we're going to do it. And so that was Head Up, as I said, by Karen Williams. I love this song. I play it as the intro song a lot because it's about keeping your head up no matter what. It's about having victory over those things in life that just get in the way. You know, the everyday pains and frustrations that give us reason to doubt God's love. Remember, we are children of the Most High God, and keep your head up. Yes. Okay, so here we go. When I was planning a couple months ago what 2017 would sound like for the Journey 8, one of the ideas that kept coming back was to give you more topics to think about and to help you start thinking outside the box of traditional religion. I wanted you to think of the what if kind of show, where we can discuss new viewpoints on Bible subjects. Now, to do that, I did some research, of course, on popular questions and took a 4-month look at the emails and the shows and see what my little brain came up with. Now, before you get crazy and think the show's going to change that much, don't misunderstand me. Well, I am not going to turn into one of those Bible bangers that fill you with sermons and platitudes and ad nauseum. You can turn the channel and find somebody that fills that need. Not going to happen. I'm just trying to make the topics a little more centered around our local church, the church that sponsors me, which is Life's Journey, United Church of Christ in Burlington, North Carolina, yeah. And try and take those issues that transcended even to broader locations. Since this is an international show, and I get email from all over the place, and I appreciate it. And I encourage you to keep writing. That's RevJudy@minister.com. Yes. Remember, the Journey 8 was started to provide a learning place, and we are going on 4 years. Yeah. This is going to be our 4th year. So, to keep that idea in mind, I thought I'd start the year off with a 3-part discussion on the topic of open and affirming. I've had a ton of inquiries from people that hear about this and want to know what it means, and I felt it would be a good start for the year. So to help me tonight, I have a special guest, Mr. Ryan Duncan, who's going to be with us a little bit later, and he's going to give us some insight of what open and affirming means to a seminary student. He's a third-year seminary student in ILF School of Theology, and we'll get some idea of where his studies take him in that subject matter. So let's get the definitions and all the statistics out of the way so that you have a good baseline to know what open and affirming is. Open and affirming is an official designation of congregations and other settings in the United Church of Christ, affirming the full inclusion of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender persons in the church's life and ministry. The Open and Affirming Program is administered by the Open and Affirming Coalition, which I am part of, which supports congregations and tries to get them on board with the covenant. There are more than 1,400 of our congregations and ministries that have signed on to the covenant. The program was enacted, here we go, in 1985, we started what then would be just a gay movement kind of thing, and we saw the need for it. The General Synod of the United Church of Christ made this declaration, and we're on board. Now that I've said those words, let me make this clear as crystal for you. Many people have written and asked, if a church becomes an open and affirming church, does that mean it's a gay church? And the answer is no, absolutely not. In many ways, the church that is seeking covenant with the United Church of Christ, Open and Affirming Coalition, will not change from its present state. The program is not meant to change the church, it's meant to add to the ministry. I have so many people that say, I doubt if my church will ever sign on to that kind of a thing. And there are other open and affirming programs out there in other denominations. But I just can't see our church changing. I think it's an interpretation thing, and I think it's a program that starts at the top with the ministry staff and goes to all the congregation. Our congregation is probably one of the most welcoming and loving congregation. We have everybody. We have tall, short, old, young, families and singles. We have everyone, and our church is much better for it. And our next show on Martin Luther King Day, actually, on the 16th, we'll talk about successful open and affirming churches with a person that is dear to me, Judy Foxworth. So there we are. There's the official explanation of what open and affirming is. And I think we're going to move in, Mr. Engineer, to part one. I had a interview with Mr. Ryan Duncan while he was here in North Carolina for Christmas. And we recorded this conversation so that you could hear what a seminary student in today's 21st century world is all about and what they think about open and affirming. So let's start with part one of Ryan's interview.
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Ryan Duncan, and I am a third year MDiv student at ILIF School of Theology in Denver, Colorado. And so I have not been a Christian my entire life. I was baptized 8 years ago, and before that I was very much a spiritual seeker. So that's the spiritual background that I have and what I bring with me. As far as my story, what brought me into the church was that I had a mystical experience, and I don't have time to share all of that now, but it was that experience and that understanding of God that brought me into the church and then brought me into ministry later.
Oh, okay. You know, I've got to tell you, I'm not a 100-question pounding your head against the wall person. But, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted you to mention that you haven't been a Christian all your life is that we don't know, since we broadcast all over the world, who's listening. And are people from other backgrounds listening for whatever reason? And I think it's important for people to understand that people that are in the seminary, that are taking a path of professional ministry, aren't always, you know, baby baptized, you know, Sunday morning Christians all their life. I wasn't. I came from a Jewish background. So I think in a relationship thing, it's good for the listening audience to hear that, you know, you have this serious focus now that 5 or 10 years ago you did not.
That's true, and I have found in my experience at seminary that many, many of my colleagues have blended backgrounds. They started off Pentecostal or Evangelical, and then they came into the Methodist Church, or they became UCC. So there's a lot more blending within Christianity than we allow ourselves to realize, because we think that when somebody describes themselves as a Christian, they know what that means, and often they don't.
Yes. And for the sake of open and affirming, which I've gone through all the legal Webster dictionary explanations of what it is, in especially in your age group, you know, the 25s to 39s, it's important that your concept of open and affirming, which will be, you know, our future that we have started now, is different in many ways than those of us who are older and have had to adjust to it, shall we say.
Right.
Now, in seminary, how does the open and affirming policies of UCC, how are they accepted?
Well, at my school, it's very well accepted. We're incredibly progressive. We're affiliated with the Methodist Church, which is not quite as inclusive, but because ILF itself is incredibly progressive, they're very, very accepting of open and affirming. There are many LGBTQIA students on campus, and they're much more progressive and liberal than I tend to be myself, which is really quite interesting, but that's because they tend to be younger. So we're not just focusing on gay students. There are also transgender students on our campus. There are genderqueer students, students of all different kind of varieties, bisexual as well. So there are a whole bunch of different kinds of students, and we have a much larger LGBTQIA umbrella than is typical. So, you know, in my generation, when I was growing up, it was all about the gay rights struggle. Mm-hmm. And now it's much broader. And so as a sexual minority, I have to remember that it's not just about me, and that I have a place of privilege as a white gay male within my umbrella of my group. And so there's still work for me to do to be a more accepting person, even within my own community.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wanted to touch on, number one, is the straight people in the seminary and how they accept you.
That's true. There's a lot of work within the community to be more inclusive. There's ageism, there's disability issues, there's racism, all kinds of stuff within our community. And I think because we see ourselves as minorities that we tend not to want to address that because we feel like we don't need to because we've already done the work, which of course we haven't. And the one thing about ILF is that they really push us to recognize our privileges and to recognize our own social location so that we can be more self-aware so that we can address those kind of issues. It isn't just about going out and marching, it's about changing yourself. And that, I think, is one of the gifts that ILF brings.
Yes, changing yourself is a big thing. And when, of course, when I was more involved in what I am now as a minister with the grassroots, we're talking about, you know, the 80s and 90s, and marching was all we did, you know, it seemed like. But it's interesting for me to look at this concept of horizontal violence, you know, and horizontal oppression, shall we say, and wonder, in a perfect world, I'll, you know, always do this to you, in a perfect world, open and affirming would mean what?
Open and affirming to me is a place or a mindset where everybody, LGBTQ people, are included. So as a UCC person, I believe everybody has ministry. And so open and affirming to me says that we recognize everybody's ministry, that everybody has some value in the eyes of God, and everybody has an equal place at the table.
Yes, and one of the things I believe when I talk to Pastor Phil in the third section is that this vision that open and affirming stretches past the LGBT and into everyone, anyone, someone, whether you are black, white, whether you are a transgendered person or you're a straight person, the concept of open and affirming, and we'll talk about your church in a second, the concept of open and affirming to me is, hey, welcome, come in. You're short and fat, great, come on in. You're tall and skinny, come on in, you know, so that it loses some of the pounding, shall we say, of LGBT and starts growing, you know?
Right, and there's a double-edged sword with that. It kind of reminds me of All Lives Matter and that whole controversy that we've had.
Yes.
When you do that and you make something about everybody, then you're ignoring the actual people that you're originally talking about. So when we're talking about open and affirming, it's specifically for the LGBTQI community, and there's a reason for that. It's because that group of people has been marginalized and they need to be brought into the center. And when you immediately go to, well, no, all lives matter, and that's really the point of what we're talking about, well, yeah, that's true. Underlying all of it is we want to be radically inclusive, and that should include other people. But right now we're working on a specific group of people, and once we've learned to love those people and we've learned to bring them into the center, then we can bring in others. But right now, we should be focusing on LGBTQ people.
Very good, yes. And part of that, from a church perspective, remember, this is a policy of a denomination. This is not a government policy or, you know, this is the United Church of Christ making a declaration that says, you know, we're going to do something about this. And the interesting thing, as I mentioned earlier, is that it happened back in 1985, that the vision for open and affirming was there long before some of the other programs that are in effect. And I believe, like you, that if we can bring the hurt, the damaged, the injured, the marginalized, the unwanted, and that usually means gays and lesbians, bisexuals, transgendered, and I. What is I?
I do believe it's intersexed.
Oh, yes. See how old I am? Hi. Once we conquer that fear, that hurt, that pain, the message and the lessons we learn are going to be phenomenal. Now, anything else before we move on?
No, I agree with you. I think the hurt is where it's at. And often churches make the mistake of inviting people into their pews and into their ministries without addressing the hurt. And then they don't understand why people leave the church and are damaged.
Yes.
You have to deal with the hurt, which is their own need, before you put people to work.
Right. And part of that is they come into the church, especially if it's an open and affirming church, and I'll use my example coming into Life's Journey a few years ago, and everybody was so friendly, and, oh boy, I'm going to jump in, I'm going to do this. It's natural for someone, when someone loves them and nurtures them, that they just want to do. Unfortunately, they burn themselves out before they even have a chance to heal.
That's right.
And that's not good.
No.
Because then you have a person who will probably never walk through the doors of a church again, never recognize Christ or God. And that's not what we're about.
That's absolutely right.
Excuse me. So let's talk about church, open and affirming. Let's talk about your vision. You got a year left to go, and then you're going to be on your journey to being ordained. So tell me, in your mind, what your church would look like.
So my church is a church by and for the marginalized. And it's rooted in hospitality, and at the center of our worship and our coming together as a community is a shared meal. So it's very much going back to the early church and what that looked like, and hopefully what it felt like. We'll have to kind of move our way into it. So as a clergy person, I wouldn't see my role as being the leader telling everybody this is what you need to do and this is what you need to think. It's more about being, I guess I'd use the term spiritual director. It's more of a director, so that I help people fulfill their own visions of themselves, so that they can feel empowered to do their own work that God calls them to do, either on their own or in the larger church group. So it's very much rooted in bringing in the spiritual but not religious, people that have very eclectic spiritual backgrounds, people that have felt marginalized, not just LGBTQ people, but also people on the social margins who are poor or homeless, people that have been hurt by the church in particular. I feel very called to that because that's me. And I think that often as ministers, we tend to minister to people that are like ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very deliberate. And I think it should be, because those are the people that I can reach because I know their experience. And so I do recognize that everyone has something to offer. Even if a homeless man is coming into the door wanting to worship with us, he has something to offer to the larger community. He's not just a project, and he's not just somebody to be taken care of. He has something to offer. He has wisdom, and he has his own gifts, even if he doesn't see them himself.
Well, it goes to the basis of everybody has a story.
And everybody has dignity.
And I have met in my time doing street ministry and stuff, homeless people that when you hear their story, you find out, well, you know, 2 years ago they had a job, a very good job. Their background is physics or something. And they've lost their house and everything. And they're homeless because they've been made homeless.
That's you know? Right.
And the mindset, unfortunately, is that you start believing that you're a failure, that you're not worthy. And those are the people like you that, you know, we scoop up, and whether you're sitting around a table with food or whatever, that the word of God starts sinking in that, listen, you were created. You are a child of the Most High God, you know. So there's your church.
Amen.
Somewhere. Hopefully United Church of Christ Church, you know, that will happen, I'm predicting. I don't know why. I don't even have my crystal ball in front of me.
You're a prophet. But what's reassuring to me about it is there are models of this already happening in Denver, which is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Not within the UCC, but there's a ministry called After Hours that an ILF alum has created, and the minister's name is Jerry Herships, and they just did a Christmas thing that they do every year where so part of their ministry is taking care of the homeless. So they meet in a pub, so there's a lot of spiritual but not religious stuff happening, but they take care of the homeless, and they feed 120 people every day. So they go down to City Park, mm-hmm, and feed the homeless. And during the holidays, they do a big thing where they bring donations of coats and sleeping bags and everything else. And they handed out 500 sleeping bags on Christmas Day, okay, which is a beautiful thing. And he often leaves posts on Facebook about the homeless giving him $5 saying, here, take care of the guys.
Yeah.
So they take care of their own. And they give out of their deep and desperate poverty. And that's a really beautiful thing. There are lots of other churches that help as well. And that's lovely. But it isn't the same thing as a homeless person giving $5.
Well, it's sort of like the parable of the widow and the mite.
That's right.
And, you know, I've seen homeless people who have actually given another one of their kind their jacket. Well, they have two jackets, so they give one to this person who has no jacket. And, of course, the weather is in the 30s or 40s, mm-hmm, and it's cold. And so, you know, how does that come into effect with the big picture of open and affirming? Well, open. Whether it's a ministry in the park, a big fancy church with choirs and all that, or a simple place where you sit down to a table and you sing and you have this project or this program that is theirs.
That's, yeah, right.
It belongs to them. You know, you're not coming in and reciting, you know, Apostles' Creeds and Nicene Creeds, and you're, you know, standing and sitting and all that stuff. And that's fine, don't get me wrong out there. I know you're about ready to put me at the stake, but what I'm saying is it doesn't fit in the 21st century a lot.
Right. There are an awful lot of people that don't go to church anymore who go to ministries like that and say, thank God there's a place where I can go that's relevant, where we're actually doing good in the world. We're not just sitting around listening to praise music. We're actually doing something. And as we lose our institutions in the larger community, I think church becomes all the more important as a place for people to gather, to love each other, and to contribute to the welfare of the larger community.
Absolutely, because when you look in society today, where else are you going to go for a community? A bar?
Yes, and people do.
You know? Or a soccer team or whatever. But you don't get the spiritual side.
Right.
And, you know, that's having community, and I'm not discouraging you from it. What I'm saying is from a spiritual sense, that's what fills you and gives you strength and stuff. It's good to know that in the 21st century, there are people out there in seminary or young ministers that have this concept that I don't need a crystal cathedral, you know, to minister, you know.
Well, you really don't. I think at the root of what open and affirming is learning how to love. And open and affirming does that in a specific way with a specific group of people. But at the underlying message of it is love. And you can't love as a hermit in a vacuum. You need to be in community to learn and to practice that. And that is one of the gifts that church brings. And church can mean anything. It can just be a group of three people that gather together to, to share their stories. It doesn't have to be an organized, official congregation that's sponsored by a church. Church can be something else. And I think that we're finding a lot more of these kind of gatherings happening that are not official. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
And that's how, when you look at the history of Metropolitan Community Church, very similar to United Church of Christ, started in the living room of Troy Perry with six people, I think it was. And it is the largest gay organization in the world. You know, I think they're up to about 400 churches now.
Oh, good for them.
So, you know, you have you have an interesting base for people to think about. And by the way, you can call in 888-627-6008. And I'm impressed and hope that God gives you the, you know, continues to give you the vision that will carry you through. So we're going to take a break and hear some music and drink some coffee, and we'll be right back. Will of Titus, and we're going to go right into part two of our interview with Ryan Duncan. Okay, so we're back, and that was Will of Titus, one of the original groups that sent me their music a year and a half ago now, and it was called Nothing's Impossible. And I played that as the intermission song because I truly believe, especially since I've joined the United Church of Christ, that nothing is impossible.
Well, I think God works in mysterious ways. And God works in her own time. So, but within that, it's true. Nothing is impossible. I'm in a place I never thought I would be, that I never thought I would want to be. So yeah, life changes rather dramatically in beautiful, wonderful ways. And yeah. I think that's lovely.
So here we are, going towards the end of the interview. We're winding up now. And I still want to hear from you. We know what your perfect church is, but in the context of religious leadership, your perfect ministry, other than, you know, the dinner ministry, and that's a good place to start, but there's more.
Well, for me, at the root of my ministry, it's always been about empowering people. So I don't see myself as the type of minister that I've taken several leadership courses, and a lot of them are focused on the fact that you as the leader are the center and the focal point of your organization, and you have to make tough decisions and you have to do all these things. And it's this very hierarchical model, which I absolutely dislike, because if you have the minister at the top, telling everybody else what to do, then it feels very much like you're dragging people into the spiritual path that you want them to be in. And as a leader, that is not what I want to do, because I recognize that my path has changed over time, and often it didn't include Christianity at all. And all of those parts of my journey were valuable. So I recognize that some people who may even be going to church regularly may find that they're being spiritually fed by being out in nature. And I don't want to take that away from them, because that's where God has put them and that's mm-hmm. where they're at. So for me, it's bringing in a group of spiritual seekers and helping each one on their individual path. So it is really very much about being a spiritual director. And I see myself more as being a community organizer and keeping the community together, mediating disputes, helping committees function more appropriately so that everybody's included and everybody has a voice. And that's at the root of really how I see my work being.
And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's pretty much the going trend with a lot of the younger, when I mean younger in their years of ministry, people in seminary or who have just been ordained, some are going to be very comfortable, you know, with the ritual and the, you know, programs of a traditional church. But I see more and more, and all you have to do is go on the internet, you know, I see more and more open and affirming type churches or religions or whatever you want to call them, right from the heavy rock people,
yes,
all the way down to, you know, your typical country kind of girl. I think that for United Church of Christ, I'm hoping that we are more aggressive about going after, you know, I like the God is still speaking ministries, where we try our best to get rid of that stigma, you know. So in wrapping up, I like that term, wrapping up, give me some idea of what you want to talk about on our second interview.
Well, I think it's important for me at the moment, I'm thinking about the evangelical church and all that they have to offer. And although I do not consider myself evangelical, I do recognize that they do community pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not afraid to say, this is what I value about my church and about God, and I want to share that with you. Progressives don't do that. And if we do, it's very intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we miss that personal relationship with God that I think undergirds and can undergird so much of our social justice work. And so in some respects, I feel like the progressive church isn't really complete, because they don't have anything really supporting them, because they spend so much time focusing on the work that they're not inwardly fed. And that leads to burnout, and that leads to counterproductive theology and harmful practices. I think really at the heart of what being open and affirming is about being loving and inclusive and being open in our relationships. It's not just about standing for political issues, it's about relationships.
Right.
And I think we can do a much better job with that within the progressive church.
I believe you're correct. And, you know, one of the things I am awaiting, shall we say, in the next year or two, is the fact that, and I'll just use UCC since that's where I belong, but the United Church of Christ has that part of a vision that we need churches, and we need the financial stability and so on. I mean, let's be real. But that we really do reach out and expand this open and affirming concept to more than just traditional church. Open the doors, you're welcome, you come in. But going and grabbing people, shall we say, I will make you fishers of men. You know, I think we've lost that concept along the way. Instead of, I will make you fishers of men, I will wait for the fishers of men to come to me. And then I will teach you. Huh? You bring me your rod and reel, and I'll teach you how to fish.
That's right. And I think what's important to remember is that when Jesus told his disciples to drop your nets and follow me, they did that because they loved him, and they felt loved, and they wanted to follow the vision. And I think that we can do a much better job about that. We have to love each other better.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. And we are hoping that we get to do this more often. Maybe not face-to-face and recorded, but live. The internet is so wonderful, you know. And I really appreciate your insight. So until we do this again, God bless you and thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So that was that was my interview over the Christmas holidays with Ryan Duncan, an amazing young guy. All right. So we are pretty much at the end of the night. I hope that y'all enjoyed that interview. We worked hard on it. And I hope that part two, which is next show on the 16th, is going to be about a successful open and affirming church and what that means and how we function. And of course, I use the church I belong to, Life's Journey United Church of Christ in Burlington, North Carolina. So I'm going to sign off for the night a little bit early, but and hope that your new year has been blessed so far, and that you look forward to more of the Journey 8. Thank you so much for spending time with us this evening. Please come back again, and remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Reverend Judy Hosner.